Carolyn's going to talk a little bit about advertising.
So like I said a little bit ago, the regulations and the statute try to take an approach where they contain specific definitions of things. And so advertising is something that is defined in the regulations. And it is defined as any message that promotes or markets any trade or business or any service, facility, or product. Then it also, the regs also give you things to look for. So if a message contains certain things, it's going to be considered advertising. And those things are qualitative or comparative language. So, you know, the best on the market price information. So if it tells you how much it costs, that's going to be considered advertising. Any indication of savings or value. So that might be, you know, $50 off, or it might be a great value, anything like that. Any endorsement. So if you had, you know, a celebrity on the thing saying, this is the best car I've ever driven, that would be considered advertising. And then any inducement to sell or use the product. And so the important thing about advertising, we're going to talk a little bit more about this, but just because something is a substantial return benefit, which advertising is always a substantial return benefit, it doesn't necessarily mean that it's always taxable. So you're going to have some substantial return benefits that still aren't subject to UBIT because they don't meet those other three requirements that we talked about. Advertising is the closest thing that we have to what we sort of colloquially call per se UBIT, which is the IRS doesn't care so much about those other factors. The IRS often, if not always, takes the position that advertising is subject to UBIT. And one big caveat to that is the NCAA tournament case, and that was in 92. And in that case, the IRS took the position that, so the NCAA hosts this big basketball tournament every year in March and April, and they issue a program. And so in the program, it'll have, you know, who the players are and who the coaches are and who's playing at what time. And then it also has ads in there, all kinds of advertising in there. And the IRS said, this is all subject to UBIT because it's advertising. And the court ultimately held that was not advertising because it was not regularly carried on. So the tournament is only hosted once a year and it lasts for about 3 weeks. And so that was the only period during which the advertising was distributed. And it didn't matter that the NCAA sort of, you know, took contracts for the advertising all year and spent time working on the programs. The fact that it was only distributed for a sort of defined period once a year meant that it was not regularly carried on. It was not subject to UBIT. And so that case still exists. That was 92. That was while all of this bowl game stuff, qualified sponsorship stuff was going on. And so there's still an open question about how does that case, which the IRS did not acquiesce to and does not like, but how does that case interact with the advertising that we see in this qualified sponsorship regime? So is there still a question of, do you still test the advertising and say it's not regularly carried on? The bowl games, of course, are only once a year. Advertising is really only distributed during that, you know, 4-hour period during the bowl game. And so there's some question of, did Congress override the NCAA case when they implemented 513 and the IRS implemented the regulations they're under? Because it did not say, you know, that this advertising with respect to bowl games wouldn't be regularly carried on. But that is still an open question. So, but sort of, you know, keeping that in mind, advertising is the closest thing to per se UBIT that we have. So the IRS is almost always going to take the position that even if you're a bowl game, you're conducting things once a year, if you have advertising, it's going to be subject to UBIT. So here's an example of something that's clearly advertising. So Michaela's going to go through some things in a little bit, and there's going to be a question about whether it's advertising or an acknowledgement. Sometimes it's hard to tell. Sometimes it is not hard to tell. And this is one of those. So this has right up front in big letters, the biggest words on there, receive a $3,000 credit. So that is price information. That's an indication of savings. And so this is pretty obviously going to be considered advertising.
One of the things that's going to preclude a payment being treated as qualified sponsorship payment is an exclusive provider arrangement. So if you have an arrangement where the sponsor is given the exclusive right to provide products, services, or facilities in connection with the activity, then you do not have a sponsorship arrangement. You have what amounts to a taxable transaction going on there. Now, you can have exclusive sponsor arrangements, and the difference there is that if the soft drink company sponsors a bowl and it's the only drink company allowed to sell products during that bowl game, that's a substantial return benefit. That soft drink company is making a bunch of money. However, if they sponsor the bowl game and the bowl's not allowed to accept any other sponsorship from drink companies, but it can sell any drinks going during the game, it just sells whatever drinks that stadium typically sells, there is no substantial return benefit. The other thing that will cause a sponsorship to be taxable is a contingency agreement. So if, for instance, the soft drink company says, well, we'll sponsor you to the tune of $100,000 if so many thousands of people actually attend this game, then they're getting a substantial return benefit. It's not a sponsorship agreement.